We are Radio Catskill. Good morning. WJFF 90.5 Radio Catskill now begins its inaugural day of broadcasting. WJFF broadcasts at an assigned frequency of 90.5 megahertz. WJFF is licensed to Radio Catskill Incorporated. Studios and offices are located on Route 52, Jeffersonville, New York. Our tower transmitter is located on Elk Point Road, Liberty, New York. WJFF's programming day begins with NPR's Morning Edition, followed by Performance Today at 10 a.m. Do make this a good day, and thank you for letting us here at WJFF be part of it. And now, we join Morning Edition. The local time is approaching 6 o'clock.
This is Sonia Hedlund, not Glenn Waddell, I'm sorry to say. But it's our birthday, 35 years of WJFF Community Radio, right here in Sullivan County. We're going to do a very different show today, and it's live. So we have two people in the studio, long-time WJFF people, gray hair and all, who got up at the crack of dawn and came over here to this marvelous modern studio. And the title is really a walk down memory lane. That was David Dan's suggestion to name this show. I'm Sonia Hedlund. I've been around here for 30-plus years doing ballads and banjos, mostly live from a studio over there by a dam site in Jeffersonville. And I've, you know, had a lot of roles. David, man with many, many hats. How did you get started in this?
Hello, Sonia. Good morning. It's quite early, isn't it?
It is. Just
you do this, I mean, every Saturday at 7 a.m.
Yes? Well, originally I did this at every Saturday live, and yes. I would get up about 5 or so, and I'd follow instructions from another opener of the station, and I would drive to Jeffersonville in the middle of the road with my lights flashing, just fearful that
for
I might
the deer.
Not. Yeah. It was over at the other studio. And then I do the show live, and it was quite a marvelous opportunity. You know, to be on the air is a big deal. I think it's a privilege.
Well, I spent many Saturday mornings with you in my kitchen while I was making coffee. I would listen to your program, and your voice was always a very pleasant early morning experience.
Yeah. I think then when you do a show live, people can call you. You know, they can call in and say something to you. So I would have Judy from the Manor. Oh, Sonia, I'm in the barn. I'm just doing my chores. And you're playing that song again, that Campbell song I like so much.
That's Judy Rosen you're talking about.
No, right? That was Judy Van Putt.
Oh.
Judy Van Putt is, yeah. So there were a lot of different characters that...
Yes.
Got this studio started. A
lot of history here.
A lot of history. So let's start with a little bit of history. And what's guiding me is this marvelous calendar, a wall calendar. It says 25 years of community radio, 1990 to 2015. And that calendar was released at our birthday of 25 years. Now, David, tell a bit about how the calendar got put together.
Well, For those who don't know, who never received this, the calendar was something that we did, as you said, for the 25th anniversary. And it was, you know, full of lots of memorabilia, pictures of people who had been radio hosts over the years, and facts and figures about the station, timelines, that sort of thing. Plus, actually had the months and the dates of the month included. So you could hang it up on the wall and tick off the days as... the year went by. Ann and Malcolm.
Just a bit. Who are Ann and Malcolm? Maybe just.
Who are Ann and Malcolm? That's a good question.
Yeah, we should say something.
Well, Ann Larson and Malcolm Brown were a couple who started back in the mid-80s, in the last century, started a company called Jeffersonville Hydroelectric. There's a very nice pond called a lake, Lake Jefferson, part of the north branch of the Calicoon Creek that is at the head of Jeffersonville. And it had a dam that had created the lake. And Ann and Malcolm in particular, was taken with hydroelectric power. And this was during the Carter administration. And Carter had gotten legislation through the Congress, imagine that, that allowed people who generated rural electric power via dam, by water power, could sell those electric energy to the grid. So Malcolm decided to build an electric company at the foot of the Lake Jefferson Dam, and that became Jeff Hydro. And he had a couple of friends. He and Ann were hosting a couple of friends in Hortonville when they were living at the time. And the friends said, "We've had a wonderful dinner. Let's tune in Prairie Home Companion on the radio." And Malcolm said, "Well, that would be lovely, except that we don't have any radio reception here." And so the friend, said, "Well, why don't you build a radio station?" And here we are today.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the start of the whole thing. In any case, the calendar, which you were referring to, was a sort of celebration of those early days and kind of a trip, as you said, back down memory lane.
Down memory lane. What I think is so helpful on the calendar is it tells when certain things were done at the station. Like in 1988 was when really things began to happen. And it was the efforts of two individuals who, you know, were not, they've just had a passion for community radio and water power. So in the fall of 86, the calendar says, Ann and Malcolm of Hortonville put ads in local newspapers inviting residents to have a meeting at the Lake Jefferson Hotel. That was the lake that's no longer there, burned down, right?
The hotel did. The lake is still there.
The lake is still there. Yes. Okay. And then the following, in August of 88, we had a big fundraiser. John Hammond. Who's John Hammond?
Well, John Hammond is an extraordinary guitarist and blues singer from back in the 60s who is still around today and still performing. And that was at the Pursuit of Happiness, that fundraiser. And it was a little bit later on, but the effort to create the station was it took about 2 or 3 years, and we got licensed in record time, in part because Ann and Malcolm, and I actually got to go along with them to Washington, D.C. to talk to Senator Moynihan at the time and urge him to fund this little rural radio station project in remote Jeffersonville in Sullivan County. And it was largely successful. And so the station built, the building was built by volunteers. And
well, I think, if I'm not mistaken, you designed the little studio.
Well, I drew up the designs for it, and I actually still have them. And Mark Keppen, a master carpenter who was sort of the straw boss on the volunteer crew that built the station, took my drawings and actually made some sense out of them and built the station. It was great.
Well, on the calendar, the page that has this information says, the little radio station that could and did. And then it goes on to talk about when things really began to happen here. One of the great benefits, the hidden gifts of support that lasted for a lot of years, was our relationship with the county.
Yes, very important, as you were saying. Tell people about that.
Well, when Glenn was going on air, we had this little mantra we had to read. We had a card, you know, this station is funded by the FCC license or something. But we were transmitting from a tower that we didn't own.
That's right.
The tower was owned by the county.
On Elk Mountain Road.
That every time we opened up.
That's
and
true.
I think we even said it at the end of the day. we weren't 24 hours to begin with, but, and we had, we paid for that $1
annually,
And we were more or less grateful, but in any case, that saved a tremendous amount of money.
Yes, it did.
And some years later, I think when it came into cyber issues or EMS, quick response, they said, you know, it's time.
Well,
for
the
you.
County decided that our signal could be a problem once the 911 addresses went in, and so they, after graciously allowing us to be on the tower for many, many years for no money,
no money, free.
We had to find another tower, which was down the road, not too far away, and that's where we broadcast from today.
But yeah,
all good.
Yeah. Now there was in October of 91, we had our first local call-in, live call-in show. Quite a character. Man has been around a long time.
Walter Keller.
Yes, Walter Keller.
The people talk back.
And the people talk back. And we did have that on the air, and you would call in and have a question or conversation with Walter Keller. We also had another show with Dick Reisling doing live commentary with interviewing someone, and people would also call in.
Yes. What was his conversations?
Yeah, WJFF Connections.
And then
Making
it, yes.
Waves, yeah. We've had a lot to do with Pete Seeger, right?
Yes. Pete Seeger was a big supporter of the station originally through the sloop, the Hudson River sloop. What was it called? Clearwater.
Clearwater, that festival.
Yes, the Clearwater Festival. And then eventually he did a fundraiser for us over at the SUNY Sullivan in Loch Sheldrake.
Interesting history.
Yeah, so much.
Let's talk about one other of our interesting hosts, Maris Hearn.
Yes, Maris Hearn.
She had the Gumbo Shop was their folk music show. And we're going to play just a bit of a clip of a Malvina record, Malvina Reynolds' Ear to the Ground album. We'll play the whole thing, but to give you a sense of the mood that Maris wanted to create on her show.
Well,
it's coming up in a bit.
It was more of a mood than that. Let's see if we can
rejigger
this. Here we go. No worries. The problem is my arms are not long enough.
That's okay. You know.
Here's Maris and Malvina Reynolds.
It is nice to block the doorway. It is nice to go to jail. There are nicer ways to do it, but the nice ways always fail. It isn't nice, it isn't nice. You told us once, you told us twice, but if that is freedom's price, we don't mind. It is nice to carry banner or to sit in on the floor or to shout our cry of freedom at the hotel and the store. It isn't nice, it isn't nice. You told us once, you told us twice, but if that is freedom's price, we don't mind. We have tried negotiation and the three-man picket line. Mr. Charlie didn't see us, and he might as well be blind. Now our new ways aren't nice when we deal with men of ice. But if that is freedom's price, we don't mind. How about those years of lynching and the shot in Evers' back? Did you say it wasn't proper? Did you stand out on the track? You were quiet just like mice. Now you say we are nice. Well, if that is freedom.
And there we have Malvina Reynolds and the mood that Maris Hearn created. She would come into the studio with a satchel full of CDs. I mean, those were the days that we had CDs, and spread them out on the table. And I remember her always saying when she wanted to give the credits. Well, where is that CD? But she was a gay woman, and we did early on, we did some shows.
And she was a cheerful woman, too.
She was a very cheerful woman and very positive. She did a show every August around Hiroshima and the bomb, and I always liked working with her on that because I lived in Japan for a while, and we talked about Hiroshima.
Ah, that's interesting. I had forgotten that. I know that Maris and I were occasional pitch buddies during fundraisers, and she was always so much fun to,
with. How did we do that? How did we do those promos for or getting people to give money? What was it like?
We just sat in the studio like you and I are doing right now and said, call this number. And it was 914-482-4141. In those days, now 845-414. And there was no internet, so you couldn't, you know,
donate
contribute
online.
Yeah. Online was like where you hang your clothes.
Yes,
you know,
so. Yes. The gay show that came out of this was Kathy Reeser.
Yes,
Out Loud and
Out
Queer.
Queer, yes.
And I had a...
With, who was the co-host? I've forgotten. Scott?
I don't remember.
I'm sorry. I'm forgetting too.
But I had a recent email from Rosie Starr, who is one who has...
She's a star.
She is absolutely a star. She does
aptly
this,
named.
Yeah. Does the show Farm and Country. Quite a unique show that's been on
yes.
a long time. But she reminisced driving up from the city and how she would listen to that show. And it was, who would ever have thought that in this kind of Catskill, not terribly progressive in those days area, full of, you know, would have a show about that, you know, gay people welcomed. And we did some events to raise money.
Day to be Gay.
What was that?
That was an event over at the Callicoon Community Center, the youth center. That happened for 3 or 4 years in a row. And it was just a, you know, music festival, a LGBTQ plus event that was, you know, supportive of diversity and inclusive. And it was a really wonderful day. I mean, I went to a number of them just because, you know, there was food and there was fun and lots of music entertainment. And Kathy and Scott, if I remember correctly, were the hosts.
But think back. I mean, this has got to be more 20, 25 years ago more. And when people were,
yes,
not were not coming out, you know, that was just beginning. And now, you know, you really...
things have changed quite a bit.
Things have really changed quite a bit about that. Yes. That's the Queen of Dead Air. And who is the Queen of Dead Air?
Cecily Fortescue, my favorite. She did afternoon classics on Wednesdays.
Okay, a little bit about Cecily, because we had a show that Jason Dole put together called Community Voices, and we would do interviews for half an hour, and he invited me to do an interview, and I had never done an interview before. That was hard. I did one of a man locally who had made a real dent in his weight loss, but in any case, I talked with Maris about her... talk with Cecily about things. When she was born, her father enrolled her into Oxford.
When she was born?
When she was born.
Wow.
And there was just a charisma about this woman whenever she was around. But she had another career, right?
Tell us about it.
She was a potter.
Oh, yes, that I know.
She was a potter. And I am so fortunate to have some of her pieces. She did a lot of them where she... with a rolling pin or something, rolled out the clay and put it over like a balloon. So it had this marvelous round shape to the bowls. And the edges were always kind of fluted. And it was,
Interesting.
Yeah, Cecily Fortescue.
She was a heck of a ping pong player as well.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, you didn't want to play her.
You didn't want to
play her. No, because you were not going to win.
You know, we also started out with... early on, there was a children's show. Angela Page was doing that,
yes.
And she asked me about it. And we have right now. I don't think we have any children's programs particularly.
No, not at the moment. But for many years, we did have one. There was Saturday mornings. Yes,
yes, and it was two very dynamic people. One is still around.
And who is that?
Jason Dole,
J.R. Dole,
and Liberty Green.
Ah, Betsy.
And then that show was called. Radio Revolution.
Oh, yes. Well, that was the youth radio program.
That was the youth
program. Was different from the children's show.
Yeah, definitely teenage
Yes, that was the older group. And my son was part of that for a brief period. Crazy Horse, as he's known.
Was that his...
To old-timers.
That was his on-air name?
Yes. Actually, I have a little clip of him here somewhere.
Oh, see if you... Well, we'll see if we can get that before we're...
Yeah, I'll try. I do have another clip of one that you mentioned. This is a promotion that was created just to raise some money for the station during one of the fundraisers. And it's this cowboy.
I love this one, David. This is the one I when we did this show, I said, can you find the cowboy? And these little promos were made in a different technology. They were called carts.
Yes, because they were tapes.
Yeah.
That were a loop, and you'd stick them in a machine and they would play the short announcement through and then stop. And then you could play them again if you wanted to. But this is what one of those sounded like.
Okay, we're rolling, Tex. Let's go. Take 23, the singing cowboy. Let's go.
I tell you, boys, I'm getting mighty hoarse. I'm the singing cowboy, down on my luck. Lost my wife, my dog, and my pickup truck. There's only one thing that I've got left. That's my favorite radio station, WJFF. Friends, so I don't have to lose it all. Well, won't you give WJFF my membership call? That's right, 482-4141. That's right. Thank you very much.
And
how's that, boys?
Great.
That's you, David.
No, that wasn't me. No. Well, maybe it was. In another lifetime.
Oh, okay. Well, carts were part of the deal, and tape was a big part of the deal, you know.
Yes. I remember having to get a feed.
Oh, next, talk about that.
Because you were terrified that you
I was terrified because I did my show, and it ended at 8 o'clock. And at 8 o'clock, I had to go into the room next door to master control.
Yes.
And I had to press these buttons a certain time, and I was totally scared. So I think for the beginning, I called Ann Larson, who happened to live right around there. And she would say, Sonia, just be calm. You can do this now. And
calm.
She would walk me through doing it. And I remember too, being sitting at the board and looking out the window. And she gave me this advice too.
Yeah.
She said, there's no reason whatsoever to be nervous. Just look out the window and talk to one person. Imagine you're talking to one person and make your voice as intimate as you possibly can.
And you did that very well.
I did that very well.
You were talking to me as I was making coffee.
Because then I was never scared. And people would call who were really unusual. They were the locals, regulars who would
yes.
call 2 minutes before I did the weather. Can you give me the weather?
That woman I spoke to many times.
And then there was a call usually between 6 and 7 from a man in a truck. He was the Fryhofer man.
Oh, really?
He was delivering bread, and he must almost always call and say something like, oh, I like that song. Or that connection was really quite lovely.
Well, right? that was the wonderful thing about WJFF was you could very much connect with the personalities that you heard on air. You would see them at public events. You, in many cases, know them as your neighbor. And certainly, as you know, as a programmer, in the studio, you know, the phone would ring. It wouldn't ring on air, but you would know that somebody was calling, and then you could pick it up. And one time when I was doing Cross Currents, the jazz program I did for centuries, I got a call from someone in London, England. At least that's what they said, and they had a very distinct accent, so I was convinced. And I said, what time is it over there? And they said, it's 3 in the morning or something like that. And I said,
wow.
You're listening to WJFF at 3 in the morning in London? And he said, that's right, I am. You sound great. I love your program. You know, I don't know if it was a fake call, but
I wouldn't think it is.
It wasn't exactly local.
Just turn the globe around. I somehow got into contact with a man in New Zealand who was an American who moved to the, he wrote to me on email or something, and he was in New Zealand, and he said, I've always listened to WJFF when I was in America, and now I'm in New Zealand. Well, when I retired from a regular job, my dream was to go to New Zealand and get more sheep than I possibly could find here. And, you know, I connected with this man.
You actually did?
I connected with this man. I said, I'm coming, and I was going to be on the South Island. And he invited me to his home, and I stayed overnight. He showed me around. He explained to me about how the supermarkets work, what the Airbnb situation. Can you imagine? There's something from England and
that's
something.
That's pretty remarkable.
That is really true.
That's great.
Yeah.
That is a great story.
Okay, so if you're just tuning in.
If you are,
this is the beginning of the station celebration of 35 years of being on the air.
Yes, it's our anniversary. I guess we haven't explained that enough, but yes, it's 35 years. When? From February 12th, is that correct?
Yes, of
1990. So we're a little bit late on it. But.
And evidently, the station is going to have all kinds of events going on throughout the year to mark this particular celebration. And I am taking my marching orders, my notes, something, from looking at this calendar that David Dan put together when we were celebrating 25 years of being on the air. This is what it starts out with, a note from the then president of the Board of Trustees. To all the WJFF's radio family, 2015 marks 25 years of community grassroots radio broadcasting on WJFF Radio Catskill. It was Malcolm Brown and Ann Larson who envisioned this volunteer-powered public radio station based in the Catskills of New York State. They engaged scores of residents to build the only hydro-powered radio station in the nation. From a small studio in the village of Jeffersonville, we broadcast to New York's Catskills Mountains, Northeast Pennsylvania, and the Upper Delaware region. Pretty nice.
Pretty nice, and, you know, on the money. That's really what we are.
Okay, so let's talk a bit more about some of the other show hosts.
Sure.
That we have in mind.
Yes.
There was a person who did a show that was really aimed at at people in prison or incarcerated. You remember a bit about that?
Liberty Green.
Yeah, Liberty Green.
And what was the name of her show?
Soul Serenade.
Soul Serenade. No, that was Jonathan Murnitz's program.
Soul Spectrum.
Soul Spectrum.
Both. We have some soul.
And she had the Silly Love Songs story that was written by an inmate, and he used the titles of classic R&B tunes to create this narrative that went on from week to week to week about these characters, and Liberty would read it on air, and it was like a soap opera. It was wonderful.
Well, she started her show, I still remember, describing her invitation. When you go to an old-fashioned dance, they'd have one of those balls that go around with the colors.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And she'd talk about that. But then people would write to her. Lots of people.
Yes, and she would read the letters.
She would read the letters, and then someone in New York City got the idea that we're going to have a little showing of all these letters, and we're going to meet this personality. So in the village, there was, in fact, an opening at a little club or an art gallery, and there was some attention played for this really very, very unusual show.
Well, it was. It was a great show, and it ran forever.
It did run forever.
And unfortunately, Liberty has left the area. I think she's in Florida now.
But, But I got to see her some years ago.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Kathy Reeser. I got to see her, too.
Kathy Reeser.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about weekend things? As I remember, on Sunday.
Well, Saturdays were folk days.
Yes. And then in the afternoon, we had something called open mic or...
Occasionally, yeah, once a month, I think there was open mic, and people could come in and play instruments.
Yeah,
and was it Aldo?
I think so, and he is still around.
Coming up
today. Yeah. But Sunday, what about Sunday afternoons?
Sunday afternoons was my program, Cross Currents. Glenn Waddell and Sunday Brunch from 10 to 2, 10 to noon, rather, preceded me. And then it was noon to 2 o'clock. I did Cross Currents, the jazz show. And then, and while I was doing the jazz show, which was, records, I was running around setting up mics for Live from Studio B, which went from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then Carol Woods McLaughlin came in and did Down by the River, which was the first program, the first local program we ever had on air. It was hosted at the time by, Judge
Finn.
Yes, Josephine Victoria
Josephine Finn.
Finn. Yes, and she hosted the program for about
that.
A year. Yeah, and that was the first program that was locally produced here in the studios of WJFF. And Josephine, of course, has gone on to more important studios since then. But Carol Woods McLaughlin took over after that, and she did it for, maybe 7-8 years.
What about Steve Richter? I think he had a show.
Radio Ed.
Yes,
Steve Richter was one of our early volunteers. He helped with the finishing up the building of the building. And Malcolm Brown, one of the co-founders of the station, said to Richter just before we went on air, we actually officially went on air on February 12th of 1990, listen, Steve, you're a good volunteer. Why don't you do a program? And Steve had never thought of doing a program. So he called it Radio Ed, as in radio education, because he was learning while he was doing it.
He did another show later called Richter Scale.
Richter Scale, yes.
And he also mowed the lawn.
He got me into mowing the lawn, too.
Yes. And then his wife, whose name is Heidi Schneider.
Heidi Schneider. Distinctive voice on WJFF.
She was an opener.
Now, yes, for forever.
What's openers? Explain that.
Well, the station for a good portion of its early years in the 90s was only on 18 hours a day. So it would start at 6 a.m. in the morning and go to midnight. And so if you were an opener, we mentioned this a little bit earlier, you would come in at about 5:30, get coffee going, and then get ready to turn on the transmitter. You had to call the transmitter, hit a bunch of buttons to turn it on. Then you would sign on at exactly 6 a.m. reading the script that we had to read. Our studios and offices are loaded and just blah, 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 all that stuff. And then you would... chitter chat until exactly 6 a.m. when Morning Edition would kick in. And it was a live feed, so you would have to hit your mark. But that would be how we started the station for a long time, until we were able to get a 24-hour license and go 24 hours.
Well, sometimes things went wrong.
Oh, and, really? Sometimes?
Oh, sometimes. But we had an angel that helped us. All the time. It was the family who lived next door to the studio.
And who are they?
Barbara Greff and Kevin Greff. And I can remember knocking on their door at 5:30. I don't have the key, or I don't know how to do this. And they would always come to the rescue.
Always. Kevin was one of the very first volunteers at the station. He and I spent many an hour on ladders hammering nails to build the station, along with quite a few other people. And Kevin did Making Waves for many, many years. It was one of our first news magazine programs on Monday evenings, starting, I think, at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, I think
something
so.
Like that. Yeah.
But then there was this other one he did called Jeff Horse. And if I've got this right, I may not have this right. That was if you wanted to try something totally experimental, you know, if it would be as if I would want sick of folk music, you know, I really want to just put on opera. I could make a show for an hour or whatever and give it to Kevin. He'd help me get the technology right. And then these experimental new things could go on Jeff Horse.
Sure. It was like an audition or something.
Yeah.
And that was Sunday nights, I think.
Yes, yes. Oh, speaking of audition, now how does a show get to be a show?
Well, there's an entity called the Programming Committee, which currently is headed by Jason Dole. And but you would make a proposal.
And this committee of volunteers and staff
yeah.
would listen.
Yeah, they'd read the proposal and say, well, why don't you try a Jeff Horse and see how it works?
Yeah.
Or submit a recording. In those days, it was a tape. And, if everybody thought it was interesting and there would be interest on the part of the listeners, it would become a show. Yeah. And more often than not, it did.
It did.
Yes.
And then I remember that program committee would evaluate shows every year. You were asked to.
Oh, yes.
And what it over time, it became that you were given a form to do a self-criticism of your show,
yes.
to self-evaluate yourself.
Yes.
And then you would meet one-on-one with somebody. I think I did one with...
They took you into the locked room, I think. Is that right?
Something
That's
like
right.
that.
You weren't allowed to
but
have
you
liquids.
Know, it was very helpful to have someone actually... You know, Sonia, you say too many ums. And I know when you're a host, the first time you listen to yourself, you are stunned by...
How many ums?
How many ums you use. Because I know in the beginning it was just awful. I made...
You're only allowed 20 ums
only
per
20
show.
Ums. Only 20. And, you know, that reminds me how I got started, really, was I didn't know much about the station, but I listened, and I happened to tune on Saturday morning when Ballads and Banjos was on, and it was
Richard Levine.
Richard Levine and Jonathan Mernod. They said, why don't you come over? And I'd never been, so I went over. That was a mistake, you know. because they were so nice, and they began talking to me, and they said, well, you know, I think you could do this. And then over the years, it was Jonathan Mernod with his show and Angela Page with her show. Her show's called
Folk Plus.
Folk Plus
Dan Labstein started that show.
And they were my mentors, and they helped me figure out a way to, you know, pick music. And those were the days when everything was a CD or a cassette. Do you remember cassettes?
Yes, I remember them very well. Oh. However, many of us, well, I in particular, preferred vinyl.
Yes.
And so that was, I mean, vinyl is now a sort of niche item, but...
Well, John Gordon on his show, I think he forever was using vinyl and...
He's in my age group, so that's why. He's a Thursday evening Ramble Tamble host.
Yeah,
and who's the new host?
It's a woman. I don't remember.
She's
her.
Great. I love her. She's very, very calm. Very calm voice.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of calm,
yes,
calm voice.
Yes,
we had a meditation show. This is quiz I'm making.
Well,
yes,
we did have. What was the program?
Brody.
Gift of Peace.
Brody. Her name was Jane Brody. Wasn't her? No. Her husband did a show about the stars.
Yes, that was Jim McKeegan.
Jim McKeegan.
You're putting me to it here, Sonia.
We had a show about the stars, and we had one Deborah Chandler who would do these things.
Oh,
about,
Dr. C.
Yeah, but the phases of the moon and tell you what phase the moon was.
Yes, but Jim did a wonderful. His segment was great, and his wife, who unfortunately passed, but she did Gift of Peace for so long. And if you were a New Age music enthusiast, she just covered it very well. And what's interesting is she sent out requests to all the record companies that produce that genre of music. And for years, even after the program was over, we would get these great boxes of New Age CDs. I mean, we had a very extensive archive of.
Yeah. Well, we did have a library of CDs.
Yes, we did.
We did.
And occasionally we would resort to them.
Yeah. And even to this day, I get CDs all the time.
Do you really?
I do. I still get CDs. And I know I see there's a box here for people to pick up their CDs. You know, that might ask, are those producers wanting to buy influence here in the station, you know, and get you to play them more often?
Pay to play.
Yeah, pay.
No,
to
nothing like that. That's just promotional stuff, and you can play it if you want to.
Yeah. But another thing we had for all this cadre of volunteers, about 100, I would guess, maybe more, was we had a little green book.
We did?
We had a green book. It was the sort of the rules and regulations of.
Oh yes, I wrote the first one.
Okay.
Yes.
And it was with staples and strings or something put together. I mean, it was very.
Well,
low,
there were several iterations. The first one was stapled, but after that, somebody mercifully rewrote it so that it was actually readable.
What was in it?
Well, it basically had guidelines. There were two, actually. There was one that had, you know, your responsibilities as a programmer, because when you go on air in this capacity, you know, you're representing the station and you have a certain responsibility to be, to follow rules of decorum.
No bad language.
No bad,
you know,
words. The seven words, you know, all that. And also you had to show up on time and you had to, you know, leave the place clean and you know, all of that. So that was one book. And that was the other one was the technical manual, which explained in excruciating detail how to run all the machines. And I'm not even sure anybody ever read it, but I wrote that one.
But that little green book, as I remember, gave you tips on what you really, your responsibility of representing the station.
Yeah, because it's a, you know, it was a serious thing. Even though we have lots of fun, we have obligations.
Well, there was one thing is, there was this obligation that if you had a show, you were supposed to do some volunteer work.
Oh, yes, there was.
That was a little hard to enforce. But
you couldn't just have glamour time.
Yes, not a bad idea.
That was Malcolm's term. Yeah. That's what got me to come in and open the station on Tuesday mornings for 5 years.
That was your way of paying up.
That was my dues.
Okay, talk a bit about how we raised money. That's fun. We really had a good time raising money.
We did. We had fundraisers on air. I think four of them a year, something like that. Yes.
But, you know, probably only 15,000 or 20,000.
Well, yes,
in the early days.
I think a big one was $25,000.
Yeah. Okay, if we had fundraisers.
About half of what we do now. But we would also have events, and we had some wonderful events. Yeah. We had the Chili Dance. Maureen Neville was the one who organized that.
She also had a show.
What was her show?
I'm sorry, I don't remember.
She'll call and tell us.
Yeah, she'll call and tell us. Yeah, what else besides Chili?
Well, the Chili Dance was in the winter, and I met my significant other at the Chili Dance. So
how romantic. How
there
lovely.
You go. Right?
Okay.
For Valentine's Day.
Yes.
And we also did the auction every year. That was a big one. That was one of our very first events was the auction. And
was my favorite. I mean, that was at the firehouse.
Well, you were a big part of that.
The whole idea of getting rid of stuff and making it available for cheap.
And dumping it on WJFF.
So we had the auction at the firehouse in Jeffersonville. The hardest thing, and I remember Kevin Greff and others coming, was setting up these tables.
Oh,
they were made of like
2-inch
plywood, and we had legs.
They weighed 100 pounds.
Yeah. So we'd set up the whole room with tables and put out stuff, and we'd price them. And in one corner, there were valuable things. A lot of artwork, you know, people would donate artwork.
Yeah, and we had tchotchkes, and we had some serious items as well.
A lot of children's toys, and there'd be food. And then we put everything away. We'd have someone come and take what was left.
Thank God.
The auctioneer?
Well, the auctioneer to start was Ward
Burlingame.
Yes. Fantastic auction. He was a pro. And unfortunately, he passed away after a couple of years.
He was known as the auctioneer for farmers.
For everything.
And he was a very large man.
He was.
And he could make jokes, which was a good way of making
money.
He had
a gift of gab, and he was very low-key. So you had to be paying attention to catch his humor. I thought he was just terrific.
Yeah.
And then we had a woman who did it for a couple of years.
Oh, who had the auction house up on 17B out of Roscoe?
Yes, I believe that's
right.
Okay. Yes. And then my dad did it.
Yes, I remember your dad.
Yes, he did it for 4 or 5 years. And then my brother took over, and he did it for 2 or 3 years.
And I remember Barbara Greff and others at the front, you know, writing down, one coffee pot, antique, more or less, and how much it was worth.
Gets it? Yes.
Yeah, that
was a lot of fun. It was a lot of work, and the staff at the station, you know, really had to extend themselves to get it together.
Absolutely.
And the volunteers as well, but And so we do a version of that now, which is a lot less painful physically.
The music.
No, the auction, we do our online auction, which is silent bids. But then we also did lots of music stuff. We would have concerts. We had James Hunter, who is a
English
R&B singer, marvelous guitar player. And he came a couple of years and did fundraisers for us. Of course, you mentioned John Hammond earlier. He did one for us. Pete Seeger, yes, did one. And then we would have just local things. We actually did a Jeff Stock over at the Yazger Farm.
Did we?
With a whole bunch of groups. Yes, Kevin Graff and I managed to produce this crazy thing, and the Jeff Bank helped to fund it. But we had, I guess, four or five groups, and it was run on a single extension cord.
Oh, my God.
They kept blowing fuses over at the Yazger house. But it was in a field, and, you know, it was like Woodstock, but it was Jeff Stock, JFF Stock.
We had Holly Near and Jay. No, we had Jay Unger and Molly
Jay
Mason.
Yes.
And
yeah.
That was a very elegant place. We went over to the Settlers Inn, and we had the most wonderful meal, and they performed there. And that was one of my favorites.
That was a very nice event, too.
Somebody did classical music. Simon Chausset did his barn.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I forgot about Simon. Yeah. He did the opera show for a while. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. There was more classical music. I mean, we had, let's see who. Oh, a German woman and Heinrich.
Ursula.
Yeah, yeah,
Ursula Good.
Well, I think hers was an opera, but it was, they were, we really did
well,
some
she
classical
did Cafe
music.
Ursula.
Yes.
And she famously would have Angelo come in and play. Angelo was sort of an autodidact character. He would just, you sit him at the piano and he would play one tune after another, segueing right into each other. And, you know, just amazing pianist.
There really was some Spanish language shows as well. It was Marcos?
Marco Bacanamuth, if
yes.
I said that right.
Okay, you didn't, but it's
I
fine.
Know I didn't, I'm
And
sorry.
That was Sunday, and Emma Spanglish con Elia.
Oh, yes.
At something. So we did have a Spanish language show. We knew that that was important because in this Catskill region.
More and more, yes. Yeah. In fact, we just did a story for Manor Inc. not too long ago. About the fact that the Liberty school system is almost 30% Hispanic. So, I mean, people who have not have recently arrived, so many people, and so we served that population for quite a while with a number of Spanish programs.
On the call-in shows, we mentioned Dick Reisling and Walter Keller. There was another one that was interesting, too, about sports. Do you remember that?
Two guys talking sports.
Sports.
They followed me on Tuesday evenings.
Yeah.
And that was Michael Barnofsky.
Who has passed, I think. And then a man who was a police officer. I don't
know. They were both corrections officers.
Yeah.
And then they had the Hammer, whose name I never knew.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's my phone. I'm going to turn it off.
Oh, your phone is going out over the air. How nice. I think people are trying to reach. I hear the phone ringing in the other room.
But I really
you can answer the
answer
phone right now.
Answer can
right
I answer
now.
The yeah, phone? Do you want? Ahead. Do you want to say something? You're on the air.
Well, no, let's not put that
no,
on
we
the
won't
air.
Put, you know, it's my significant other, Dick Reisling. I'm going to hang out on him. But
okay,
he was also here as an opener on Mondays. And then
Dick was?
Yeah,
okay.
For a long time.
Wow.
And many years he did this live show.
I remember first meeting Dick, you, I think, and Dick over at the Greff's house. We were talking about Kevin and Barbara Greff earlier. They took up residence in Jeff Hydro, and Kevin took the project over from Malcolm Brown. And I think there was a dinner party over there one night, and that's where I first met you guys.
Yeah. Well, we also had events at our farm, Apple Pond Farm. That was really fun.
Yes.
You know, we'd give your
babies
dad
in the barn.
We had babies in the barn.
And they were babies, and they were in the barn.
Oh, my goodness, Green.
You know, I remember one time, Sonia, that you came when we had the town crier years ago. You brought a baby. Not in the barn. You brought it over to our offices, and it was wearing, you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong on this, but it was a goat that was wearing a lamb's skin. So
yeah,
that
sometimes we do those things to graft something onto another one.
Yes.
What was the story about the, I don't think we told it, Hotel Jeff burning down? That was in the middle of the night and in 90, I think it was.
Well, the
2010.
Yes, Lou Grupp, who owned the hotel and was the supervisor for the town of Delaware, or town of Calicoon, rather, passed away, and it was sold to a group that was going to turn it into a sort of a, what was a precursor to an Airbnb. It was going to be a sort of a luxury hotel. And so they gutted it, and then funding, as so often happens, disappeared, and it was empty for years. And
yes.
Then somebody decided that it would be fun to burn it down, and they did.
So. Well, and that burned all the wires to the tower on Elk Point.
Oh, yes, yes. That's
so
true.
So we were not broadcasting. And if I'm not mistaken, it was Angela Page and Christine Ahern, who was the manager then.
Station manager.
Earl.
Yeah. Neitzel.
Who was our ace in the hole, wonderful.
Earl got us on air. He kept us on air. He worked for Cablevision and was an extraordinarily generous and kind and quiet individual. If he said two words in the studio, it was a lot.
But if something went wrong, he would come and help us.
He would.
So they went up to the tower on Elk Point Road. There really is a place.
Which is just a cinder block building. No heat. Well, there's a little heat, but not much.
Somehow, I think Christine or somebody got enough cinder blocks pulled away, and they had all this equipment with them, and they broadcast.
They broadcast right from the tower.
Yeah.
Until we could hook ourselves back up, telephone-wise, from the studio.
You know, there is also another event that happened at the Hills Hotel, now called Calicoon Hills.
Yes, over in Calicoon Center.
Yep. There is a network of the radio stations that are lower financed. They're smaller. They're more rural, called
NFCB.
No, it's the Grassroots Radio Network.
Oh, yes. That.
And we hosted that show. And it was a conference for the whole weekend. That's when Pete Seeger came.
Pete was there, yes.
And it was marvelous because there's this fabulous picture in this calendar of everybody over at Hills.
Well, when we had the volunteer appreciation party, which we do every year, because we appreciate our volunteers.
We do.
Yeah,
we do. Play a little bit of music, maybe, and then a couple more cards. Play a funding card.
All right, wait a minute. I have something here that's queued up, and I've forgotten what it is, so I have to look at my crib note.
That's okay. Look at your crib note.
I put it on there now I'm not sure which disc it is. Maybe we'll just push the button and see. All right, this is I have no idea what it is. Oh, yes, I do. This is Mark McGill. Do you know Mark McGill?
No, but let's play it.
Well, you'll know. Here he is.
Most folks just send in their cards and letters, but not Ellie Fisher. You may remember her from when she wrote in about her sixth grade science project sweet potato, or used to write. Seems Ellie had heard all this talk about listener-supported public radio, which pretty much slips in one ear and out the other. Maybe it's just her scientific bent, but whatever it is, Ellie talked her mother into driving her down to what is blithely called Radio Catskill here in Jeffersonville, so Ellie could find out for herself what listener-supported public radio was before she went into the seventh grade, where the question just might come up. See, Ellie's heard a lot about the seventh grade from her smart-aleck older brother Sid, and she figured she'd best be prepared. So Ellie stopped by to see whether it was some Wizard of Oz deal with mysterious guys pulling levers behind the curtains, or if it really was just regular folks that you'd see on the street who decided they needed a radio station and just went ahead and built one. That's sort of what she'd heard, but she wasn't sure you could just go ahead and do that. But then she didn't think you could just go ahead and build a pond either, until a bunch of guys with bulldozers showed up at her Uncle Ed's place one summer when she was little. Ellie always figured radio was something that just came from someplace else. You just switched it on, and there it was. Well, she doesn't think that anymore. She saw it's just a couple of rooms in a little building by a lake in Jeffersonville, filled with volunteers. And that's it. Some of the programs come from national radio and so on, but nobody makes them, play them. And the rest of the shows are made right in those couple of rooms by people who want to do them. Nobody makes them do that either. Seems like a pretty good idea. kind of makes sense, really. Ellie figures that maybe the seventh grade isn't going to be such a big deal after all, in spite of what Sid says. If you think listener-supported public radio seems like a good idea, then why not call and lend your support to Radio Catskill, WJFF? The telephone number in that little building is 482-4141. And don't be surprised if somebody answers just because they want to.
Charming, isn't it? Mark McGill, who was a programmer here at WJFF, produced the Laundry Creek series back in the late 90s. And oftentimes, I think he would do fundraisers with Maureen Neville. And the charm of it was very much like Prairie Home Companion, which, in fact, was the program that, at least the fact that we couldn't hear the program, was the fact that got WJFF started way back in 1986 or so. But anyway, Mark McGill, you missed most of Mark McGill.
That's okay.
But many listeners may remember his Laundry Creek narratives, which were very much reminiscent of Prairie Home Companion. Anyway, I'm David Dan. This is Sonia Hedlund's program, and she has allowed me to come in and yammer my way through it.
I think it was a good way to start off this year of celebrating 35 years. It is a marvelous accomplishment. I think all of us who've ever had anything to do with the station in a working capacity and also in a donating capacity be surely proud of the effort that's gone into it, because it has made a real difference in this whole area. You know, renewable energy is not such an unknown word now, and our Lord Buckley, whatever that name of that generator was in the Greff's house, you know, there are a lot of things to remember, and we hope that you enjoyed the show. And we hope that you'll stick around and listen to other shows. There'll be more about this. And throughout the year, a lot more will happen to celebrate this marvelous community radio station. So for David Down and me, we'll just play some music as we go out. And as I always like to say on my show, work like you don't need the money, love like you've never been hurt, and dance like no one's watching. Thanks so much for tuning in.
And in case you're wondering just a little bit about the weather, that's one service that we do offer here at WJFF. It's 24 degrees outside our studios on this Saturday morning. Look for snow showers early, and then we'll see steadier snow developing later this afternoon. Highs only topping out at 24, which is where we are right now. Winds out of the southeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. We expect snow accumulation between 1 and 3 inches by the time it's all over this evening. This is WJFF in Jeffersonville, Radio Catskill, NPR, culture, and lots of great music. Stay tuned.
And for millions of New Yorkers, that means more money in your pocket. For the second year in a row, the minimum wage in New York State has gone up. Both this year and next, the minimum wage is increasing 50 cents per hour. That's an additional $2,000 to spend on all the things you need. In 2027, the minimum wage will be tied to inflation, which means increases will match costs. New York's new minimum wage, putting money directly into the pockets of New Yorkers who need it most. Go to ny.gov/affordability. Sponsored by the New York State Department of Labor.
Listen to Farm and Country Saturday morning at 10. The best of rural life and agriculture for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. That's Farm and Country Saturday morning at 10, only on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.